tech is here. Artificial intelligence is changing us. We look at what's with us today and what's coming in the next 5 years. Hi, everyone. I'm Dan McGregor. Welcome to my podcast, The Wise Machine. Today, we've got the topic, trains of thought. Will US rail freight get smart? And who provides the traction? And it's with Nick Little. People think that the rail industry is slightly dull and that the subject of data is only interesting to nerds. But our world is changing fast. When you put these two things together, we find something very exciting is happening. I have with me today Nick Little, who originally comes from the UK, but he's earned his stripes in the USA. Nick is the Director of Railway Education at Michigan State University. He's working at the Center for Railway Research and Education. We're going to steamroll through the topic of rail freight today and look what's happening in the USA specifically. I'm actually not the biggest fan of the word smart. It seems to get stuck onto everything, but let's run with it for now. Let's try and make this concept real for the listener. First of all, Nick, welcome. Why is rail freight so important to all of us?
Rail freight in the United States really covers 40% of all the freight that is moved in the country, and it covers 30% of all the value of exports from the USA. Nearly everything that we consume, sometime or other, has had a journey by train, whether it's a car, whether it's cherries, whether it's some product that you eat, and virtually everything, consumer products and a lot of products that go into other manufactured goods, they've all traveled by train at some time in their supply chain.
So clearly it touches our lives all the time, but even though it's invisible or we're not so much aware of it. So, and then we go into the next topic of what is smart rail?
Well, smart rail for freight really ties into the supply chain. It's how we get stuff. One of the things my dad taught me was that people will always need stuff. So I thought that's a great job to be involved in. Get involved in supply chain management, get involved in the railway, and here I am today after a career of 40-odd years and counting. So getting what we want, where we want, when we need it is very important. But without data and without information, that job is so much more difficult because you're just holding a wet finger up in the wind, so to speak, and hoping that things happen. One of the things that railways are gradually doing is adopting the sort of thing that we've all come to know and love from Amazon and things like that with e-commerce, of being able to track and trace where your goods are at any moment in time. In the past, what happened was somebody loaded up a rail car. It was picked up on day one, on if you were lucky, and day 20 on the other side of the country, it might get delivered. But you wouldn't know for sure. That made it very, very hard to plan your inventory, very hard to plan how you can satisfy your customers. And gradually, everybody is coming to the realization that the customer is important.
Oh, that's really valuable insight, and I think it makes it really relevant to all of us. And I'd like to know a bit about how we get that data off the rail cars. Do we fit devices on then?
All the rail cars have already got an RFID type of device that actually can track their movements. That device works as the rail car is leaving a classification yard, which is a sorting yard, and when it arrives at a new one, it's measured again, and that all that data goes into a central database called Railink, which is part of the Association of American Railroads and is accessible to the railroads themselves, but not to people outside the industry. What doesn't happen is that data get translated consistently into good information that can help customers manage their business better.
Right. Okay. So we need to actually shift on from the original devices and move into more active sensors and gathering of more data. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. And it's not just on the rail cars themselves as to where they are. It's about the condition of the rail car as well. Because if you have sensors, smart sensors on a rail car, that is going to be able to report the condition of that car back to a central place, and you're going to be able to deal with any potential problems before they cause a real disaster. Whether it's a derailment or a delay, it's still a disaster to the end customer. And these sensors can give that information back. It can be analyzed, it can be logged. There are also wayside cameras now that can take a photograph of every vehicle as it passes at line speed and compare that to a digital twin that it's got in its memory and can begin to identify when something is showing signs of wear that may need to be maintained, may need to be repaired, may need to be taken out of service at the first chance you get.
So that's a really interesting insight, and that sounds pretty futuristic. Is that why we see the rise of initiatives like RailPulse?
RailPulse is certainly an interesting thing to look at because there are two of them out there in North America. One is a group of different organizations in the industry led by Norfolk Southern, one of the Class 1 railroads. It's also got in a couple of smaller regional railroads, and it's got a couple of rail car manufacturers. And they're looking much more at the condition of those rail cars from a safety perspective. The other RailPulse is a consultant's data solution that does a lot more of the analysis on railcar performance.
Okay, so basically the point is to enable transparency and new data-driven services on the performance of the fleet, the quality, the condition of the assets, the processes around components. That's the first one, is it, that you talked about with Norfolk Southern involved? Right, okay.
They're both important, really, because you've got to be able to satisfy your customer. You've got to be able to satisfy your operations, and you've got to do it all safely. So that's the really important thing, because we're talking about trains here of 15,000 tons and almost 3 miles in length at times. So they're really big beasts, and if something goes wrong, it can be a disaster on a very big scale, especially if you've got dangerous materials in those cars like chlorine or other hazardous products.
It makes sense. I mean, I've seen some of the crashes and so on, and it doesn't look good. I mean, there's obviously a lot of these rail crossings are going through urban areas as well in the US, and this is sort of how the US developed its infrastructure, and this is part of its legacy. But it means the implications of getting it right and wrong are really quite considerable.
It really does. It's really very, very important. Every consist of a train, every car on that train, the manifest is known, and that is communicated nowadays to first responders when there are hazardous materials on every train that passes through their jurisdiction. So that information is out there, and that's the use of big data that's very productive.
Okay, before we get into that, I'm going to just sort of focus again onto the consumer for a second, because, you know, you started by explaining why it's so important for everybody who wants to receive their stuff, whether it's bought from Amazon or from wherever. And, you know, we sort of tend to forget about the whole supply chain. You know, everyone just clicks the button and looks forward to it arriving. But actually, you know, it's rail is a part or one of the components in a wider supply chain, isn't it? What trends do we see in a wider supply chain that's sort of driving this?
That's a really great question, Dan, because one of the things that Michigan State University is known for is supply chain management. We've been talking supply chain since the 1970s, and we've noted that the modern supply chains have gone through a series of evolutions. Firstly, there was what we call supply chain 1.0, which is an internal efficiency focus. And then supply chain 2.0, that focus changed to accommodating customers. And then supply chain 3.0 said, well, some customers are more important than others, so we need to look at customer relevance. And then supply chain 4.0, where we see leading organizations today, is all about digitization of the supply chain and being able to use the information that you gather to improve the customer experience. What I would say is that on the railroads, they're stuck in supply chain 1.0. They're really focused on being lean through PSR, and they're looking at safety. So they're looking internally. They're not really looking out to their customers very much. Some of their customers are really important, and they do have good communication with them, but it doesn't build a great relationship. It's still, the railroads are still thinking, we are a railroad. they're not thinking we are part of our customer's integrated supply chain. And one of the things I'd like to see is that change, and data would be one of the things that can help it change.
So what we're hoping for is that rail takes its role in the integrated supply chain of 4.0, that actually each modality, whether it's rail or road or sea, it takes the relevant leg of the journey. Is that right?
That's right. We talk about passenger mobility, but I believe there's a thing out there that I'm calling freight mobility. And data will help make it freight mobility as a service, which will bring together all those different modes. And if I'm a company and I want to send something from point A in one country to point B in a different country, using all those different modes, I can find how to do that most efficiently online by using some sort of app. And that's where I think we've got to head towards, and railways will be an important part of that. Now, the situation's complex in the US because our railways are vertically integrated. So there's no common infrastructure for them to run on. They own their own track. And we have 7 class ones, which are the large railroads, but we also have about 600 small railroads that are short lines, and they do the first and last mile. So even within the railways itself, we've got an integration issue to make sure that the short lines work with the class ones to give good end-to-end service.
So we've got fragmented information, we've got silos, we've got a limited amount of ability to share information. We need to find a new technology or digitally driven solution. And we've discovered already that we've got two drivers of this. One is the consumer expectations. Everyone's expecting their things to be delivered tomorrow or even today. And then we have the cargo owners who want to have an integrated supply chain in their own businesses. Now I'm going to jump a little bit. So hot news recently, Biden's administration has issued an executive order to drive new regulations and calls for transparency in the supply chain, also aimed at carriers, sea shippers, the shipping lines and so on. How's that going to affect things? Is that going to switch it up now?
I think that'll bring things up to another gear. I think it will be a bit of a wake-up call for people in the industry to the fact that they're no longer just an island. They are really part of the overall supply chain. The executive order is really interesting because its total length is 31 pages, and there is just about one page that talks about railways, talks about a number of different things, mergers and the open access that has been talked about in this country for a long time. Very different from European open access. We call it it's all to do with switching, and it's of access for one company to send something from where it is via an intermediate railroad to a major railroad that would take it a long distance. So it's the ability to have choice. And I think what the executive order is aimed at doing is giving people more choice, or at least keeping the amount of choice they have at the current level and not reducing choice anymore. The railroads in this country at the moment, they're already virtual monopolies. Turning them into an actual monopoly would not be a good thing for shippers, not be a good thing for railway customers, not be a good thing for the railways themselves, I would argue, because in the long term, they wouldn't have a will to invest and reinvest. And reinvesting in an organization like a railroad, updating all your track, updating your systems, becoming digital is absolutely important, which is why they reinvest about 20% of their revenue every year in keeping up a state of good repair and developing new products, new services through new digital applications and other things.
So Biden's office is on a good track here, and he's actually doing the right thing for the consumer, yeah?
I think he is, yeah, definitely. I don't think the railways are too happy with it, particularly the class ones. They do not want to be re-regulated. If you go back to the 1970s, before an act called the Staggers Act was passed in 1980, the railways were very heavily regulated and they didn't have any money to reinvest. And so the whole system was in absolute decay, a bit like Britain's railways in the 1950s.
Well, you're providing some fascinating insights. There's loads of things that I don't know that you're talking about here. So this is great. Nexio obviously is developing trade tech solutions. And, you know, I'm a bit surprised. Why isn't Silicon Valley doing this? I mean, Amazon is logistics.
Absolutely. Amazon ship a lot by rail, believe it or not. They have their own containers. So they've got 53-foot containers, which is the standard size in North America, that they move by rail and by truck. Why hasn't Silicon Valley seen the railway as an opportunity? They think it's an old-fashioned industry. You know, they think it's 200 years old, and the only time that people ever worry about the railway is when they're stuck at a level crossing and there's a long, slow freight train going past. Well, the only interesting thing about that train is the graffiti that you can see on the outside of it. You don't really know what's in that train. Yet, as we said at the beginning, that train is moving what's important to people every day for their everyday lives. So the industry itself has moved considerably in the last 10 years and is moving very fast still. A majority of jobs that have been filled in the last 2 years in the rail industry have all been connected with data and technology one way or another. The other big thing that the railway is concerned about is cybersecurity, because a long ribbon of land has dedicated to a very important form of transportation. And if you begin to go towards automation, and there's a lot of computer equipment on every railway locomotive at the moment, if you find a way to hacking into that, you could bring the nation to a standstill very quickly. So the Department of Defense has recognized that this is an issue, and there's a lot of work going on to make sure that it doesn't become a liability.
Okay, great. So there's some security issues, the safety issues. What are the other blockers? What can we do to accelerate this?
The biggest blocker is the culture of the industry. Railways traditionally have been an industry where they're family dominated. People doing the work are second, third, fourth generation railroaders. That's beginning to change. We're now getting leaders of the railway industry who are really bright people that have grown up in the industry in some cases, but in newer cases, they have actually come in from other industries and other types of work. You know, in the past, it used to be somebody who worked in transportation who gradually clawed their way to the top of the organization. Nowadays, you have people that have been in marketing, people who have been in finance, that are actually leading a lot of the big railway companies and some of the short lines as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. So you need that sort of interdisciplinary approach and also a data-driven approach to actually start to see the opportunities rather than just the risks. I guess one of the major risks for anyone in the supply chain who isn't going digital is that they may not get an invite to the table in the future. Is that real?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by not getting an invite to the table.
Right. I just mean in terms of if they can't provide transparency and data on processes and so on, then there's a risk that they might not be invited to RFPs or RFQs in the future because it's a norm or it's expected. Obviously, you know, sort of we're in the early adopter phase, but as it starts to take off or as it starts to become the norm, one of the things that we see, you know, with road transport is that, you know, people feel more comfortable because there's kind of some GPS data available at some points in the journey and so on. And that's not currently available for rail freight. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, as the world moves forward, it starts to become a prerequisite to have the transparency. Would you agree?
I think transparency is very important. Whether it's transparency or visibility is the point of discussion, in my view. Railways can make the information that they've got from all the data they collect visible to their customers. There are security concerns again, because you don't necessarily want to, everybody to know what's in every rail car that's moving around, because you can't police it the whole time. And we do have problems with when rail cars are standing overnight, they get broken into. goods can get stolen, things like that. So you wouldn't want everybody to know that there's a container of 96-inch TV screens on a train that's passing through Detroit in the next couple of hours, because somebody might want to break into that train and help themselves. So it's visibility for those that need it that's important, but it's transparency of purpose that I think is what we've got to be able to strive towards. And I think that is something that is fundamental in supply chain management, and it's fundamental in creating trust and good relationships.
I think that's a really interesting distinction you've just drawn there. Obviously, you know, visibility is a double-edged sword in some ways, because people don't just see what you're doing well, they see what you're not doing well, as people are kind of paranoid of that. But when you talk about trust, I think that's probably one of the great drivers of this. You know, we need to be able to trust each other, because we don't do the whole journey ourselves. And it's about, you know, the transfer of goods, of value, of information, of services through that supply chain. I actually try to think about the supply chain as a global value network rather than a chain nowadays, because there's so many different participants and actors in the process. Does that ring true for you?
That certainly does. We don't look as the railways as just a point-to-point service. It really is a network, because with networks, if something goes wrong in one part of the network, it can have implications on a wider area. You know, in the US, Chicago is often looked at as the bottleneck of the railway system, because that was where all the lines to the west of the country started from. So there's a lot of history that brings an awful lot of rail traffic through Chicago. And if you get a lot of cold weather in the winter in the past, it all used to seize up. So the railways got together and they looked at how can we actually improve that operation. And their answer was by cooperating with one another. They learned that lesson the hard way. It's actually been beneficial. Now they're taking that same cooperative principle forward in Chicago and in St. Louis and in Memphis, which are the two other points crossing the country that are very important for the industry. And they're adopting a lot of the same principles, but with a technology background as well. So in Chicago now, you can see in one location, all the trains that are heading towards Chicago, you know exactly what is on that train. You know when the crew are going to run out of their time to be on the train. You know when the locomotive is going to run out of fuel and need refueling. So you can plan all those things together, and you can make sure you've got the right power, the right human resources to be able to move trains without causing a big congestion.
So the railroad culture is changing. We see new people come into the railroad culture, and you know, obviously it will get smart, or it is getting smarter by the sounds of it. Just back to take a final look on who provides the traction, which is the most important element that's going to drive that cultural change. Is it on the regulation side, or is it on the market side?
I think the market will drive that change. I don't think we need regulation. The railways face a big challenge. If we have electric trucks that can be autonomous or platooned on the freeways, that's a big challenge to the railways. The life of a Class 8 truck in this country that moves the majority of freight is about 8 to 10 years. The life of a railway locomotive is 40 to 50 years. The life of a rail car is 50 plus years in some cases. So from an asset replacement point of view, guess who's got the advantage? It's the trucking industry. And the railway's got to be able to find a way to address that issue and move very quickly, very nimbly, and very smartly to be able to remain competitive. It already is competitive from an environmental perspective, and there are things that technology can do to help improve fuel consumption, to make better use of the energy, to use less energy, and to use alternative means of power and energy sources other than just diesel. You know, in the US, it's not like Europe. In Europe, you've got a wonderful electrified railway and it's very efficient. It's very environmentally friendly. In the US, we're still using diesel, but we're improving the diesel engines all the time so that they produce less and less pollution. But we're also looking, or at least we're beginning to look, at alternative sources of fuel, whether it's hydrogen fuel cells, batteries, or a combination of the two, and anything else that we can look at as well. And that's one of the areas that we're majoring on at Michigan State University. What can we do to help speed that process along so that we can maybe take some of those freight locomotives and instead of rebuilding them with a new diesel engine at their midlife, put in something that's much more environmentally friendly and has less emissions.
So we've been in some ways answered the question, who's providing the traction? And then now we've just redefined the word smart. There's two types of smart. There's the smart from the technology. There's the data-driven smart. But there's also the smart mentality that's associated with the culture in terms of how do we change this for the better? How do we drive change? And how do we supply or support our customers and the recipients of that value with improved services? So I think this has been a really insightful session. Is there anything to add from your side, Nick?
I would just say that transportation is a very interesting subject to be in. It's a real ecosystem in itself, and it's part of the bigger ecosystem that affects everybody every day.
So I thank you for your time today and thank you for your comments. It's been really a pleasure, and I think this will be extremely valuable for lots of people. So very, very much appreciated, and we catch up again soon.
Okay, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure from my end.
Thanks, Nick. Catch you soon. Bye.